Good morning, and I'd like to greet you all in Christ's name this morning. It is a pleasure to be here with y'all, and I really mean that. I'll tell y'all something y'all probably already know, and that is that Florida is a beautiful state. And coming here and seeing old-time friends, we just had a really good weekend at Jason's. And I want to thank them for their hospitality. Thank y'all for the few I've met of y'all have been very kind, very gracious to us. So thank y'all for that. Keep that up. Just a little bit before I get started, I've known Jason and Naomi nearly my whole life. Jason was we would have overlapped a little bit. He was older than me. But as I worked with him at my job, he was my boss or my leader at work before he moved here. And then he was deacon, and then I was ordained deacon. Everything I learned about deacon church work, a lot of it I learned from him. He was a good teacher for me in that. So y'all have a fine deacon here. I'll just say that. And down here in sunny Florida, it's amazing. Arkansas has sunshine in the wintertime, but it seems like it can tend towards rainy sometimes. And to come down here in the sunshine in 75 degrees, it's amazing. Y'all are blessed. All right, for a message this morning, Jason gave me no indication of what to preach on, so I'm preaching what I feel like the Lord laid on my heart. So y'all are welcome to listen in. A lot of this is me preaching to myself. It's stuff I have learned and am still learning. I'd like to talk about stewards this morning. Kind of an old word. We don't really use that much, do we? Stewards. I'd like to think a little bit, first of all, about an estate auction. I would suppose Florida is a little bit like Arkansas. Occasionally there's estate auctions. And I was at one recently back home. Me and a friend of mine went. Sometimes people have estate auctions because of a life change. They're moving, and it's the quickest, easiest way to dispose of whatever they've collected. And they're moving a distance. They don't feel like taking it with them, so they sell it. The quickest way is an auction. Sometimes there's an estate auction because of what they say a late estate auction, which means simply somebody has died, and this is the easiest way the family came up with to dispose of this man's possessions or this woman, whoever it is. And so they get everything out, and they put it on sawhorses and plywood, and an auctioneer comes along and sells it. Y'all know how that is, don't you? And you have all these people coming around, pawing through all the deceased person's stuff, trying to get a bargain on it, trying to see what kind of a deal they can get. And this estate auction I was at was the man was a mason. He had a lot of masonry tools on there. He was obviously a hardworking man. A lot of his stuff was half worn out. And people were trying to see, is there anything we can salvage out of this yet? Anything we can use? And there's nothing wrong with an estate auction. They're great. I enjoy them. But so why do I bother telling you that? It's because this deceased man, guess what he took with him when he died? He took absolutely nothing. There was no U-Haul truck following him to his grave. He took exactly nothing. There wasn't so much as a trowel or a hammer he took with him. All this stuff he used to make his living in this world, it wasn't any good to him anymore. Now, there was a time it served him well. It was a time he fed his family with the work he could do with these tools. But when God said, I'm done with you on earth, God was done with him. And none of these possessions at that point meant anything to him. Sometimes I go through life and I like to think I'm really buying something that's going to last me for forever. You know what I mean? I'm going to go get me a good tool. Maybe it's a Snap-on or a Milwaukee or whatever in your mind is a good tool. Let's go get good stuff so we don't ever have to buy another one of these tools. And there's no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with that. But one of these days, you're going to leave it behind, and one of these days, I'm going to leave it behind. One of these days, that's going to be my obituary in the newspaper and my late estate auction, and none of it's going to do me any good. And it's good to go through life thinking about this. So what am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say we are stewards. God has given us these things to use in our lifetime for his honor and for his glory, but there's a time we lay it down and we move on. Somebody else is going to finish wearing it out. Don't forget about that. One of these days it's going to be my old worn out tools on the table and my lawnmower and my four-wheeler in a row. I'm going to be done with it. Let's turn to, I'll read a few verses out of Genesis chapter 1. Genesis 1, I'll read 28 through 31. And as you're turning to that, I'll just say that while God has given us this gift, these gifts and these resources on this earth to use while we're here, one of these days, I'm going to be judged by how I use these resources, and so will you. So let's read Genesis 1, 28 through 31. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given you every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, and the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So way back in Genesis, right after creation, God is telling us everything on this earth he has given for us to use. We're to be managers. We're to use it, and we're to use it responsibly. So a lot of this message today I'm going to be sharing with you, it's going to be maybe personal opinion, you know what I mean? And I have scripture that I'm going to share along with it that I feel like I can back it up. But I just want to say, I don't like to preach my personal opinion because there's sometimes I might be wrong. A lot of times I am wrong. So you can take this somewhat with a grain of salt if you want to. Maybe you disagree with me, and you're welcome to disagree with me. But I would like to talk a little bit. I could talk about stewarding our health or our time, but I want to talk especially focus on our money. So what does a little hillbilly like me from Arkansas know about money? Probably not that much, to tell you the truth. If you're looking for a sophisticated stock market analysis, we might as well just go right back out the door, because I don't know nothing hardly about that world. But one thing I know about money is I'm a little bit like Zig Ziglar. He says that I have had money and I have not had money, and life is certainly much easier with it than it is without it. And that's true. Life is easier with a little bit of money in your pocket. But money is also a source of corruption. The pursuit of money will lead you a path you don't want to go. I'll just tell you that. If you pursue money this morning, you'll probably get it, but you won't have a lot of friends if that's your main focus in life. The two things I see as causing so much grief in this world is the pursuit of money and power. And a lot of times those two go kind of hand in hand. Where you see a lot of power, you see a wealthy person. And sometimes when you see a wealthy person, you see a very powerful person. So I want to tell y'all this morning, don't pursue money. Don't make it your focus in life. It'll leave a miserable path behind you. But at the same time, we have to come to grips with the fact we need money to live in this world, don't we? I need money to put food on the table in front of my family. We need clothes. We need transportation. And it takes money to do that. So there's got to be a balance somehow, right? Somehow we have to not focus on it, but we have to learn how do we handle this resource God gave us. It can be very dangerous, and the Bible has some strong cautions against it. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, "Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gave us richly all things to enjoy." Isn't that an interesting verse? He gave us it to enjoy it. But we're not. If you have money, and I'll get to this later, but we all are very wealthy people here this morning, whether you feel like it or not. But we're not to be high-minded, nor to trust in it. And everybody in here this morning comes from maybe somewhat of a similar background, but also radically different backgrounds in some ways. It's the way I grew up, the way I was raised by a widowed mom, so her philosophy on how to handle money is obviously very instilled in me. And the way y'all grew up might be totally different. And somehow we need to learn to accept each other where we are and learn from each other. There needs to be a willingness to learn. Have grace with each other. I know I have areas I need to grow in this. And that tells me maybe y'all do too. I don't know. Like I say, nobody told me to preach this message down here. I'm preaching it because I feel like God wanted me to preach this message. So I'm going to give y'all some practical things I have learned in my life and I'm still working on. They say you preach messages that you lack in your own life. So sometimes some of this stuff is stuff I kind of had to learn the hard way. Proverbs 29:18 says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." Habakkuk 2:2 says, "Write the vision and make it plain." So I'm going to tell you something that maybe will make your hair curl. Have you ever heard of a word called a budget? Nobody likes a budget, do they? The first time somebody tried to tell me to do a budget, it was almost repulsive. It felt restrictive. I did not want to sit down and do a budget. But I took somebody's encouragement to do that, and me and my wife sat down and we did a budget and we completely flunked at it. We were big time failures. It takes time to learn to do a budget. It really does. But I want to tell you, married couples especially, I think everybody should sit down with a paper and a pen and write out what you're going to do with your money for a month. And especially you married couples. It will force you to communicate in ways that you've probably, if you haven't done one before, it will force you to communicate and learn and get along. Or it forces communication that doesn't come naturally otherwise. So I would here we are at the beginning of the year, I'd challenge y'all to try it. Take a piece of paper, sit down and put your income up, what you think you're going to make this month at the top, and put your expenses down below and see how you land. Maybe you'll have some extra and maybe you'll learn some things about where you've been spending your money you missed for a while. And I'll tell you something else, you husbands, sometimes I can get in my head that my wife is at home watching the boys, and I'm off at work, I'm making the money, so I can get, if I'm not very careful, the mentality that it's my money. And if you are a married man this morning with a wife at home watching your children, I'll just tell you, she has as much right to that money as you do. She is taking care of your youngins at home, and she gets a say-so in your monthly budget. That's what I think. When the preacher walked you down the aisle, or before you walked down the aisle and you got married, he said, "Now you are one." So guess what? You both get to work on it together. Have a savings goal. Not to get wealthy, but it's good to save for a rainy day. And that brings me to another point, is have an what I call an emergency fund. Guess what? Everybody has emergencies every now and then, right? Or maybe y'all don't in Florida. Maybe it's warm here and you can work all year long and so the money comes. I don't know how. I doubt it, though. But I have learned that with my wife at home watching the children and me at work, I can, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I can always make money for whatever's going to happen. Because I see me, I'm earning it, I see it coming in and all this. Your wife at home is not, while she's worth a lot, she's not necessarily bringing money in the door unless she has a side job or something like that. So in her mind, having a fund off to the side that the husband, leave it alone, don't touch it. Let her see it there. And unless there's a legitimate emergency, don't touch it. Leave it there. It gives a peace to your wife that you might not realize. It might be more important to her than what she lets on. All right, moving on. Y'all, this might be a little bit awkward, but do a will. I told y'all before, one of these days it's going to be my picture in the obituary in the newspaper. And every one of us is going to die. So do a will. Do an end-of-life plan. Some people would rather have a trust. And sit down and plan what's going to happen with the things that God gave you in this world. What's going to happen after you die with them? Some people like to have this almost secretive, it's a big secret, and after you die, there's a big reading of the will and who gets what. That shouldn't be so. It needs to be, if somebody is involved in your will, you need to tell them about it. Who's the executor? Who's going to take care of your stuff? I'll just tell you, we had a young man back home that he was 15 years old and he was on his way to work one morning and he got killed. It was very sad. But he was a 15-year-old boy and he was a hard worker and he had saved some money, a pretty good chunk of money for a 15-year-old boy. And I know you're not technically of age till you're 18, but you know what would have been really, really helpful? I got the privilege of helping that young man with some of his finances. And it would have been really helpful if he would have had a will. I don't know how much it would have stood up in courts being that he was a minor and all that. But to have direction from him, what he wants done with his few possessions and his bank account, would have been really, really helpful, because there's other people that would like to... I don't know what his wishes were. We could kind of try to guess what his wishes were. But there's other people that have lots of opinions, especially in the family, what should happen with that money. It would have been really helpful if I would have had the foresight to encourage him to write out what he wants done with his stuff. And it does something else. It's good for us as people to think about this stuff. I know when I sat down in that lawyer's office and me and my wife, we wrote out our will with the help of a lawyer, it's kind of a morbid feeling, but it's very good for you to realize that we're not going to be here for forever. It's good for you to, first of all, plan for it spiritually, and then right after that, plan for what's going to happen. It makes it so much cleaner for your family. Even if we don't have million-dollar estates and all this stuff, still, what's going to happen with your cell phone? What's going to happen with your car? What's going to happen with who gets the children? That's another thing. In today's culture, ever-liberal-leaning culture, I'm not going to take the chance without a will that some judge is going to look at my estate and my children and say, the Mennonite lifestyle is too restrictive, I am sending them into foster care. I'm not going to take that chance with my children. Write out, find who's going to take care of your children and let them know, or ask them if they're willing to do it. Write it down. It shouldn't be a secret. And I took it maybe I'm too overbearing, but the will is a little bit vague in some areas. This is how it was for me personally. So I took papers and I wrote typed up designated things that I wanted done. The children go here, the money gets managed by this person, and that person pays the child caregiver. You can make it whatever you want it, but make it specific and easy to understand. And if somebody's involved in it, tell them about it. All right, enough on that. Cars and trucks. Y'all like cars and trucks? You know, we have a mechanic back home, a really good mechanic, and I like to walk into his shop. And sometimes he has the whole cab pulled off of a truck and the whole engine laying out to the side. And it's amazing what an engine will do for you, right? I love a big engine, and especially love it when it's running right. I think most of us men would probably like that. Something that makes a loud noise, and that's just kind of what us men like, right? And then you wrap that thing up in a nice truck body. You put leather seats on it and maybe a GPS, and men can almost get mesmerized by that. And I'm one of you. I'm right there with you. But I look back on my youth and my life, and you know where I lost probably most of the money in my little short life? Was probably in cars and trucks. I remember coming to mom one time as a teenager, and I came up with this. I really wanted a car, a certain car that I absolutely could not afford. And I came up with this plan that I had to build my credit score. So I came to mom and said, I'm going to go to the bank. I'm going to borrow the money for this car so I can build my car. I had it all figured out. This was going to be a foolproof argument. And wouldn't you know, mom forbade me to do it. She wouldn't let me do it, and which nearly broke my little heart. But looking back, mom was wise beyond her years in that. She was wise. I did not need a car like that, for one, as a young man. I'd have probably wrecked it. And for number two, I sure didn't need that car payment as a young man. Me and my delicate little needs certainly did not need that much of a car. We lived back a gravel road at that time. I was going to beat it up. So I just, for whatever it's worth, car debt is certainly not a sin. It is, I don't believe at all car debt's a sin. But looking back, I have lost so much money on trucks. I buy them and I sell them, and there was only one time that I ever remember actually making any money, and it wasn't that much. So if you buy a vehicle, I would really encourage you to pay cash for it if you can. And just as a general rule of thumb, if take your yearly income and cut it in half, and you shouldn't own more than half of what your yearly income is worth in vehicles. And why is that? It's because vehicles tend to go down in value. I know the last 2 years they went up. It was kind of weird. But generally that's not the case. So Just as a rule, that's not always true. Obviously, there's times that, you know, maybe an older man is retiring, he doesn't have much of an income, but he has the money for the truck. Well, then that rule might not make sense. Or maybe you're starting a business or something. It might not make sense for a little bit. But as a general rule of thumb, it's kind of something I go by. Debt. I know I spoke a little bit about car debt, but debt is, really debt is not much of your friend. I'll just tell you that. Have y'all ever, I know when I went and bought our house, we took out a mortgage on it. And you know how easy it was to sign that line? It was not hard to get a loan. And then it comes time to pay for it, and you see how slowly that thing goes down and how hard it is to pay for it, and you realize you are a slave to the debtor. And I'm not saying that I think we did the right thing. I think looking back, it was still a wise decision. But debt has a way of tying you down if you're not careful. And like I said, I don't believe it's a salvation issue, but the Bible does call you a slave along with a lot of negative connotations. If we take out debt, it can cause stress. Anyway, something else to think about. is debt. We don't really view debt as a product, but that's how bankers view it. They get a lot of them get paid on how much they sell. So how nice is it to be a salesman, a debt salesman, which is in my mind a little bit what a banker is, not always, but you're a debt salesman and you have people literally coming to you and asking you, begging you for your product, and you actually have to sometimes be the one to turn them away because they're not responsible enough. You have to be the one to tell them that they're not responsible enough for your product. That's kind of maybe a backwards way of looking at it, but a lot of people think if the banker's their buddy and the banker lends them money, then maybe they're somebody. Don't look at it like that. They're in it for what they can get out of it. And I'm not saying they're not your friends. I actually know the banker back home where I have my account, and I meet him, and he talks to me, and he's a nice chap. He is legitimately a I guess I could call him my friend. I don't know him that well, but he's in a business. He's selling a product. So don't forget that. A little bit also on credit cards. I don't know what y'all think of credit cards. I know a lot of people use them, and I don't think there's anything wrong with a credit card. I don't think it's sin. But I will tell you, when we started out our very first in our married life, I didn't have one. And then I decided I'm going to get smarter, sophisticated, and whatever. And I got one. And it worked all right for us. It worked all right for us. But I started noticing my spending habits going up. And they went up and up and up. And I used to pay my credit card. I prayed it every month, very religiously. I never carried a balance on it. But there was one month I came home with my paycheck and I almost couldn't pay that credit card bill off. And I thought, this is ridiculous. And I actually got rid of it and I hadn't had one since. Now I know there's many people I know that responsibly carry a credit card, but I'll tell you something, if you put money on a credit card, you're standing in the fast food line, it's not hard to supersize your order, is it? It doesn't cost much extra. And even on my debit card, it's not hard. But if I'm whipping out a $20 bill to pay for my lunch or a $100 bill for several people's lunches, all of a sudden it's a little harder. It makes you think a little bit. It makes you think just a little bit more if you see the cash actually slide out of your hand. Just something to think about. Deuteronomy 28, verse 12. I know this is Old Testament, but it says, the last part of that verse says, "And thou shalt lend unto many nations, and thou shalt not borrow." God knew borrowing was, it has a way of making us beholden to somebody in more ways than what we realize. Just a little bit on mortgages also. I know I talked a little bit about that already, but think about it before you just sign the paperwork. It is so easy to sign that paperwork. Just think it through and have a plan to pay it off. The amount of people that go to their grave still with a mortgage in America is astounding. And the amount of people that think that for their whole life they're going to have a mortgage payment, I think it's sad. We live in America, which we don't always feel that wealthy, but it's the wealthiest country the world's ever known. And we let the culture seep into us sometime, and we think we're just going to always have a mortgage payment. You don't have to always have a mortgage payment. Have a plan to pay it off. Just because the bank thinks it's wise for you to have one, don't mean it needs to be a lifetime commitment of ours to always pay the bank. All right, the last part of the message here, the best part of it, I think, tithing and generosity. So you can do three things with money, right? You can save it, you can spend it, or you can give it. That's about all you can do with it. It's not good for much of anything else. And I have been blessed to live in a congregation and have friends that are generous. I have learned so much from their generosity. And it's so rewarding to live in amongst a group of people that generosity is expressed in not just money, but it's expressed in time. And you just see people willing to give. That's a blessing. That is a blessing. Genesis 12:2, back to the Old Testament again, God was telling Abraham here that he was blessed so that he could be a blessing to others. And I think that's what God wants of us Christians today yet. He has blessed us, not just so that we can do whatever we want to or whatever is fun, not saying that we can never have fun, but we are blessed that we might be a blessing to others. Don't forget that. God called us to live unselfishly, not to abandon our families and never take care of our families by giving so much. That's not what he's asking of us. But he's asking us to make sure that we, after our household's taken care of, flex your generosity muscle. Use it a little bit. It is good for us. I used to fail so miserably in this area. I still do. But I used to, when it comes to tithing especially, I would go through the month, I'd pay my bills, and whatever was left in the checking account at the end of whenever the offering time came, you kind of just put your leftovers in. And I was not very diligent in my tithing. I was pretty much a failure, to tell you the truth. Looking back, I'm embarrassed. If you wait to tithe until all your bills are paid and you make sure you're taken care of, it just has a way of not happening. Maybe that isn't y'all's experience, but that's my experience. I would encourage you, when you get your paycheck or however that works, take 10% or whatever percentage right off the top and give it to God before you do anything else. When I started doing that, I was amazed. I actually never ran out of money at the end of the month. It still worked. That's just a little bit of an encouragement for you. Malachi 3, I'll read a few of those verses. It's the very last book in the Old Testament. Malachi 3, 6 through 10. For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from my ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing, and there shall not be room enough to receive it. God was shaking up these folks by telling them that they were robbing him by not bringing their tithes into the, I think he called it the storehouse here, the church or the... And I used to view tithing and giving as one and the same. In other words, I would take my tithe and I would use that to... As I thought, as long as I was giving it, I'm fine. You could buy it. Take somebody out to take a friend out to eat. Well, I'm giving, right? Or I'm buy somebody a present or... You're giving it, right? I look at it a little bit different now. Maybe I'm too legalistic in all this. I know the tithe is an Old Testament rule, but I personally think my 10% needs to go to the church. And if I want to give above and beyond that, then I can do what I want to with that. Maybe I'm too legalistic about that. I don't know. Y'all can tell me after church. I don't care. 2 Corinthians 9, 6, and 7. more on giving here, but I say, he that soweth sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. Every man according as he has purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. I think God's telling us not to be a tightwad. I don't think it's wrong to be frugal. I think we need to be frugal. But I don't think we need to hold our money in a fist. Did you know that if you hold your money in a fist, you might keep what's in there, but you can't cram any more in it? Did you ever notice that? Even a dog can understand if you have a hand open. I'm not saying we need to run around giving money to everybody, but hold your money that God's blessed you with in this life. Hold it loosely. Let him take it if he wants it. Generous people are fun to be around. Not just because you might get a free handout or a free lunch, but because it does something to the person. We all want to be around happy people. Generosity has a way of making people happier. To whom much is given, much shall be required. If I ran across this statistic that if you make, we hear a lot of, going back a little bit, we hear a lot about the rich people in the media. The media like to portray the 1%. You know what I'm talking about? What's interesting is I read this statistic that if you make $41,000 a year, you are in the richest 3% of the world. That's an overall world. The media is looking just at America, but overall, if you make $41,000 a year, you're in the richest 3%. Every one of us, if you're sitting here this morning, is probably very, very wealthy compared to the world's standards, if you look at the whole world. And I think we Christians, me especially, I sometimes fail so miserably. I get this selfish, hoarding mentality. And God, that's not from God. That's not a godly mentality. God wants us to be givers. Something else to think about: money magnifies who you are. If I'm a poor jerk, guess what's going to happen if I get a lot of money? I'm just going to be a really big jerk. But if you find a kind person who's kind, whether they have or not, and they're willing to give what they have, even if it's not much, and you give that person, if that person comes into money, guess what? A lot of times they become a philanthropist. They want to give. It magnifies who you are. It's kind of scary if you think about it. So hold your money with an open hand. Be willing to give. Be willing to be generous. It'll make you a happier person. God bless y'all here. It's been a pleasure to be here with y'all and see where Jason lives and to visit with you folks. We really enjoyed the weekend. We'd appreciate your prayers as we travel home. We plan to go home this afternoon, and just want to wish y'all God's blessings here.